Now, are you recording? It says it's recording. Let's hope it continues to record. Okay. Is it recording? I don't understand. It says it's recording, so let's hope it's recording. Okay. So let's go to this guy. And we are recording. It is the 7th, right? No, 6th of February. 6th of February. We've got a lot to do today. And we have always had a lot to do today. Anybody new to class? Anybody new? First time?
Yeah.
First time? Okay. Did I give you the handout?
No.
No? Okay. Okay. Did you get an ad code? Did you get an ad code?
No.
Okay. Come see me after class for an ad code. Okay. Here's the... Where is it? What are they? Here. There you go. Okay. Syllabus and all that other good stuff. Okay. All right. So, Sam Alcala. Alcala. Sorry. Can you take a joke? Diego Alvarado. No. Alejandro Alvarez. And Imani Sick. Vincent Bombolo. Lisa Boyer is here. Justice is
right
there. Good man. Flor Castro? No. All right. Natalie Castro. Okay. Jose Cuellar. I think we lost Jose. Sam Diaz. That's you. And Daphne Duran is here. Cool. Did you make it on Tuesday? No. Okay. Don't forget, online. Everything's online. Aaron Alcalni. And Tamara Flores. No, Giovanni Galdian is here. Sarah Gourlay. No, she's not. Carla Guzman is here. And Nancy Hernandez is here. And Eric Carrera. All right. Stephen Hodges. Good man. Viri is here. Where is she? Oh, sorry. There she is. And Ethan Lambrecht. Okay. Melissa Leiva. No, Andres is here. Giuseppe Luna. There he is. And Luis Marchan is right there. Okay. And Luis Marquez is right there. Kevin Martinez. Sergio Martinez. And Caleb Mejia. George Navarro is here. Nicholas is right there. Josue is not here yet. But Emmanuel Padilla, no. Javier, no. Terion, Aaron Ramirez, Isaac Rincon, oh, there he is, there's Isaac. David Ruiz is not here yet. Oscar Ryan, and Janet's here. Sandra Vargas. No, Fabian, Andrew Castro, no, Jacqueline Enriquez is here, Arden is here, Ruben, Chris Carmone is here, Abel Rio,
here
he is, and Valeria is here. And your name, sir?
Aaron.
Last name.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, there he is, Aaron. Okay, good. Anybody's name I didn't call? Yeah, we're going to get you in class, right? All right, so tell people there's plenty of room. What happens is we lose students when they realize they have to work. There's work to be done. I apologize. But, hey, what are you going to do? So who's got a good joke? Anybody got a good joke? Nope.
What did the fat man say to the ice cream man?
Well, I don't know. We're not all the... You can't create a hostile environment. You can't say that about, you know, large people, so... I don't know. I don't think we should answer that question. I told the one this morning. What did the green grape say to the purple grape? Oh. Breathe. I told you they'd get worse. Anyway, so today we have a lot to do, and get your packets out from chapter one. All right, and we're going to do a little review. But first, we have some announcements to make. The Investment Club is going to meet today in here at noon. I was chastised. So we're meeting at... Let's go over. We're meeting... Here's a DocuCam. DocuCam is right here, and we're meeting at noon today. So, and I forgot to change the room number. So when I sent this out to the other professors, they went, it's no longer 221. Ah, sorry! Okay, so I got to redo these. But we're meeting here today at 221 at noon. It's going to be an organizing group. But I already got one very high-powered woman from the industry to come to agree to come see us. So I know we're going to get some great... great folks to our sessions. Now, I was thinking, well, you know, wouldn't it be cool to have this? Oh, by the way, remember I told you I had some gold? There it is. let's zoom in on that. One of my students who was a gold bug, and I told him, you know, I don't really like gold. He said, well, and he didn't even give you this. So it's one grain of 24 karat gold. There it is. Minute and two. I don't know what it's worth. Maybe, you know, $20 or something like that. I don't know. But anyway, it was very kind of him. And I'm not going to pass it around because the last time I passed something around, didn't make it all the way to the end. So some, I love students. You pay to put it on. Okay, put it in this book. Yeah, so don't forget to come today. All right, so that was that. All right, so that's the gold. Okay, what else? Investment Club, Securities Kit. Oh, Canvas. Canvas. How many people would like to work in Canvas? Anybody would like to? I don't know. You're in the face-to-face class, and I always thought, you know, wouldn't it be cool if the face-to-face students could use the Canvas? Because Canvas is pretty cool. You walk through the materials, and some people like that. Some people look at the Wonder Professor website and go, you know, all those links. So this chunks it, chunk. And I thought, oh, I don't want to have to copy everything one at a time, copy. And I was playing around with it, and it turns out you can do it like that fast and copy everything. So when you go to, anybody not ever gone into Canvas yet? Anybody has not gone into Canvas yet? All of you done? Okay, cool. So you go to my SWC, and then you put in your, I can't see, I need my glasses. You put in your... Southwestern Community College, good stuff. And then I put in my password. And then, never. You're going to see, I'm not sure, it's going to look a little different for you, but where are my glasses? You find Canvas, wherever it is. Where is it on your screen? I don't even know where it is on my screen. I usually just type it in without having to worry about it in structure. But you'll see a link to Canvas. And it's actually swccd.instructure.com. And so, boom, you're going to see your Canvas dashboard. And one of the choices will be Business 123 Introduction to Investments Tuesday and Thursday. Tuesday and Thursday. Now, if it doesn't show up, you go to the list of classes, and you'll see it. And you put a little star next to it, and boom, it'll show up on your dashboard. Or you just go to classes, and you'll see it. So now when you click on that, as some people already have, because I saw some of you were in there already, I see that, and you'll see the home page, and then all you have to do, so now I added this morning, start here. You click on start here, and then it'll start walking you through the various modules. You don't have to start there, you can just go to modules. And you'll see all the, and I thought I was going to have to copy each one individually, but it turns out you could just copy them all in one shot. So there's the introduction module, teaches you about Canvas, goes through the syllabus, you don't really need to do that. But then here are all the things we do in class for the online students, but if you want to use it, great. If you don't want to use it, don't use it. Fine, but that's fine with that. Now, okay, any questions on Canvas? Cool. All right, now, I was having technical problems. I don't know why this thing cut out. It says it's still working. I can't see it, of course. It says it's still working, so we'll see. But I also have my phone here, but that doesn't pick up very well. I should probably get a little heart attack. and get a little microphone and look like an idiot, but everybody else loves it. All right, now, questions, thought? Yet another scam. I just saw this yesterday. Yet another scam. This was on Investors Business Daily, which you probably never heard of Investors Business Daily. They made a big push in the 70s and 80s to have an alternative. It's based in L.A. to have an alternative to the Wall Street Journal. It was never very good. A few of the things they did were pretty good. But I was on Investors Business Daily, and I saw this yet another scam. Where is it? Where did it go? Here it is. Yet another scam. Turned $500 into $650,000. Look, without risking a dime in the market. Is that cool? They don't tell you that it's going to take 5,000 years. You know, at 1% in your bank, it'll only take you, 4 or 5,000 years to make $500. But, you pay the $2,000 for the five-day course, and then they teach you how to make $500. See, it's a scam. Okay, are you going to fall for any of these? Are any of my students going to fall for these scams where somebody tells you something too good to be true? Everyone should say no, Frank. Wait till I ask you. Are you going to fall for these?
No, Frank.
Thank you. That makes me feel good because I don't want any of my students getting suckered in. Okay, we're ready for the security handout. So get your chapter one handout, and we're ready for this guy right here. So we went through the major asset classes on Tuesday. So I want you to take about 2 minutes. Don't think too hard. If you don't know the answer, you don't know the answer. But what are the major asset classes? And then you just put the little A, B, C, D, E, F there. And this is basically your takeaway from our presentation on Tuesday. You need to be able to explain to somebody in two or three sentences without going into any detail about these asset classes. So go ahead, fill this out. Take about 2 or 3 minutes. Take your time, but hurry a little. Okay? Okay, who snuck in?
Oscar Ryan.
Oscar Ryan and?
Xavier.
Okay. Oscar Ryan. Okay. Okay, and your name is?
Leopard.
Ethan. Okay, and Martinez, Sergio Martinez. Oh, it's your first time here? Okay, well, you got to tell me because you were here late. You got to tell me because I was, after 2 weeks, if you don't show up, 2 weeks, I have to drop you. Sergio Martinez?
I've been here the last 2 days.
But I had you came in late, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, I don't know. You gotta tell me. You gotta tell me. I'm not a mind reader. I wish I were. Okay, done? All right, let's. All right, so let's take a look at these guys. Ouch. All right, so what are investments with very little risk, correspondingly very little return, often used as a place to park your money or for an emergency fund, 3, 6, 9 months?
Short-term securities.
We're not going to lose any money. We're not going to make much money. What are speculative securities that derive their value from an underlying security or asset? Examples include options contracts and futures contracts, often just called options and futures.
Derivatives.
Radioactive. 100% one day, up, 100% down the next day, and you lose everything. Securities that represent ownership in a corporation. Investors receive dividends, capital gains, or capital losses.
Common stocks.
Those are, everyone in the cheap seats, you got to say it too. What are they? I know you might think I'm crazy, and you may be right. But when you say it, you learn better. When you turn around and say it. What are fixed income securities that represent loans to corporation, municipalities, state and local governments, agencies, federal government, investors receive interest, promise to repay the loan?
Bonds.
Fixed income. Securities designed to offer the stability of fixed income investments with the opportunity for capital growth of equity. Examples include preferred stock, convertible bonds, hybrid securities, the best and the worst of both worlds. And what are investments that pool investors' money and invest in a diversified portfolio of securities? What do you get? Diversification, professional money management. These are mutual funds. Now, I am going to, after the exam, when we do the exam, it's going to be a Scantron portion, a written portion, and then when you turn it in, I'm going to give this back to you. But I'm only going to give you the terms. And I want you to, you don't have to do it verbatim, but in 1, 2, 3 sentences, you should explain it to somebody as if they knew absolutely nothing. What the hell are these stocks? I hear about them every day. And you don't want to get into detail. You just don't write a book. Don't write a paragraph. Just 1, 2, maybe 3 sentences. Is that a deal?
Yes, sir.
If I tell you what you need to do. So if I called you up at 2 o'clock in the morning and said, what are stocks? You'd go, they're ownership in a corporation, and you can get dividends and capital gains, or you can lose. Okay, you understand? That kind of thing. Okay, good, cool. Okay, so that's that. So start, does that sound like you should study that? Should burn it into the back of your eyelids? Everything's good. Now, how are we doing? Huh? How are we doing? You guys were geniuses. You picked Tesla, and Tesla then did a skyrocket, right? Did you follow it on Monday and Tuesday, and then it crashed? This is what happens, right? People, is it too late to get in? Skyrockets, and then when people realize that, hey, Tesla's a great company, I just hope they succeed, they still could fall apart, but everybody else is up. I really should go back and do it from Thursday, because Friday crashed, and I thought, okay, I don't want to give them a too bad. But anyway, you guys are geniuses. You guys are geniuses, so well done. All right, so let's get back to now the Chapter 1 presentation, which we had not finished, the risk versus return. And we showed you that if you want to get better returns than your savings account in a bank, you're going to have to take some risk. And we said, 8, 9, 10% over the long term is not too bad, as long as we have a long-term perspective. Even if we don't have a long-term perspective, people in their 40s and 50s, they still can do fairly well. Half a sandwich is better than no sandwich. But when you hear about people saying, you're going to get 300%, 100%, 3,000%, you know that they're lying, they're scamming, and they're not allowed to do that. But this is where we ended, as I remember. As I remember, we said, isn't somebody doing it? Aren't there people who are making tremendous gains in the market of more than 8, 9, 10%? And the answer is true. There are people out there. And there are also people who can hit a fastball at 98 miles an hour. Can you hit a fastball at 98 miles an hour? A couple of you think you can? What? Exactly. If you train and you're good at it and you don't run out of the box, which is what I would do when that thing comes by. Can you hit a little ball? Did we get to this part? Hit a little golf ball 400 yards down the fairway in 3 shots. Okay, come on in. Oh, okay. She decided not to. So, if you want to be an investor, a trader, then, that's great. We'll point you in the right directions. But I don't know if I can help you that much. I'll do the best I can. And actually, I did have one student who was bound and determined to do it. And I warned him. And he actually did it for quite some time. But now he's back in he's in graduate school now, so he doesn't have time. But that's what he was doing. And he actually, you know, took some lumps. He got hurt. But he kept up, because usually they don't last more than a few weeks. People think they got, you know, 5,000, I'm going to start buying and selling, and then after losing 30, 40, 50%, and maybe all of it. One student, he was sitting right here, and this was, what, 2 years ago? He had lost everything four times. He had lost everything, and he was, what? Yeah. Well, you know, he was bound and determined. Now, it wasn't a whole lot. You know, I can imagine going to my wife and saying, well, you know, dear, you know that retirement account we used to have? What? What are you talking about? What did you do? So, anyway, so what we're going to do now is learn from the best, because that's what I always look. I always try to steal from, you're going to steal from the best. You'll learn from the best. So this is one of the best bond traders in the world. He then went on to start, along with two Nobel laureates, a company called Long Term Capital Management that almost brought down the markets. His name is John Merriweather. And his adversary, John Merriweather, yes. I'll point you to the video about him. It's still up on YouTube. The Trillion Dollar Bet, it's called. And he's up against his adversary, John Gutfreund, which means good friend in German, so I'm going to say good friend. Okay, and this is from a book called Liar's Poker by Michael Lewis. And if you find anything by Michael Lewis, we're going to refer to him later on, you read it. Okay, so this takes a couple of minutes. Don't worry. Anybody ever hear of Liar's Poker?
I want to say yes.
Yeah? Okay, well, just stick with us. It was sometime early in 1986, the first year of the decline of my firm, Solomon Brothers. Our chairman, John Goodfriend, left his desk at the head of the trading floor and went for a walk. At any given moment on the trading floor, billions of dollars were being risked by bond traders. Goodfriend took the pulse of the place by simply wandering around and asking questions of the trader. An eerie sixth sense guided him to wherever a crisis was unfolding. Goodfriend seemed able to smell money being lost. He was the last person a nerve-wracked trader wanted to see. He liked to sneak up from behind and surprise you. This was fun for him, but not for you. Busy on two phones at once, trying to stem disaster, you had no time to turn and look. You didn't need to. You felt him. The area around you began to convulse like an epileptic ward. People were pretending to be frantically busy, at the same time staring intently at a spot directly above your head. You felt a chill in your bones that I imagine belongs to the same class of intelligence as the nervous twitch of a small furry animal at the silent approach of a grizzly bear. An alarm shrieked in your head. Goodfriend is here. Often as not, our chairman just hovered quietly for a bit and then left. You might never have seen him. But this day, however, Goodfriend did something very strange. Instead of terrifying us all, he walked a straight line to the trading desk of John Merriweather, a member of the board of Solomon Incorporated, and also one of Solomon's finest bond traders. He whispered a few words. The traders in the vicinity eavesdropped. What Goodfriend said has become a legend at Solomon Brothers and a visceral part of its corporate identity. He said, "One hand, $1 million, no tears." Merriweather grabbed the meaning instantly. The King of Wall Street, as Businessweek had dubbed Goodfriend, wanted to play a single hand of a game called Liar's Poker for $1 million. He played the game most afternoons with Merriweather and the six young bond traders who worked for Merriweather and was usually skinned alive. Some traders said Goodfriend was heavily outmatched, others who couldn't imagine him as anything but omnipotent, and there were many, said that losing suited his purpose, though exactly what that meant was a mystery. The peculiar feature of this challenge was the size. Normally, the bets didn't exceed a few hundred dollars. Now, for you and I, a few hundred dollars is a lot of money, but in New York, that's lunch for these guys. You know, that's not a big deal. But $1 million was unheard of. The final two words of his challenge, no tears, meant that the loser was expected to suffer a great deal of pain, but wasn't entitled to whine, bitch, or moan about it. He'd have to hunker down and keep his poverty to himself. But why? You might ask if you were anyone other than the King of Wall Street. Why do it in the first place? Why in particular challenge Meriwether instead of some lesser managing director? It seemed an act of sheer lunacy. Meriwether was the king of the game, the liar's poker champion of the Solomon Brothers Trading Floor. Okay, now, talks about Meriwether, who was, you know, he also was a bit of a legend, and he talked about, you know, how he had made his millions and the like. And now, finally, what is liar's poker? Well, you get a group of people, as few as two, as many as 10, and you form a circle. Each player holds a dollar bill close to their chest. The game is similar in spirit to a game card name known as I Doubt It. Each player attempts to fool the other players about the serial numbers printed on the face of their dollar bill. So they see what's on their dollar bill, but they don't see what everybody else has. Everybody just sees their dollar bill. One trader begins by making a bid. He might say, for example, 3 sixes. That means, all told, the serial numbers on his dollar bill and all the dollar bills equal at least 3 sixes. Once the first bid has been made, the game moves clockwise in a circle. So let's say the bid is 3 sixes. The player to the left can do one of two things. He can bid higher, the same quantity of the same number, like 3 sevens, 3 eights, 3 nines, or 4 sixes, for instance. Or he can challenge. He can say, no, I don't think you have that. The bidding escalates until all the players agree to challenge a single player's bid. Then and only then do the players reveal their serial numbers and determine who is bluffing whom. In the midst of all this, the mind of a good player spins with probabilities. What is the statistical likelihood of there being 3 sixes within a batch of, say, 40 randomly numbered generators? Formerly 40 randomly generated numbers. For a great player, however, the math is the easy part. The hard part is reading the face of the other players. The complexity arrives when all the players know how to bluff and double bluff. The game has some of the feel of trading, just as jousting has some of the feel of war. The questions a liar's poker player asks himself are, up to a point, the same question that a bond trader asks himself. Is this a smart risk? Do I feel lucky? How cunning is my opponent? Does he have any idea what he's doing? And if not, how do I exploit his ignorance? If he bids high, is he bluffing? Or does he actually have a strong hand? Is he trying to induce me to make a foolish bid? Or does he actually have four of a kind? Each player seeks weaknesses, predictabilities, and patterns in the others and seeks to avoid them himself. The bond traders of all the Wall Street firms played some version, but the place where the stakes ran highest, thanks to John Meriwether, was the New York bond trading floor of Solomon Brothers. The code of the liar's poker player was something like the code of the gunslinger. It required a trader to accept all challenges. Because of this code, which was his code, John Meriwether felt obliged to play. But he knew it was stupid. For him, there was no upside. If he won, he upset good friend, his boss. No good came of this. But if he lost, he was out of pocket $1 million, which was worse than upsetting the boss. Although Meriwether was by far the better player of the game, in a single hand, anything could happen. Luck could very well determine the outcome. Meriwether spent his entire day avoiding dumb bets, and he wasn't about to accept this one. "No, John," he said. "If we're going to play for those kind of numbers, I'd rather play for real money. $10 million, one hand, no tears." Okay? $10 million! It was a moment for all the players to savor. Meriwether was playing liar's poker before the game even started. He was bluffing, of course. Good friend considered the counterproposal. It would have been just like him to accept, merely to entertain the thought. It was a luxury that must have pleased him well. It was good to be rich. But on the other hand, $10 million was a lot of, and still is, a lot of money. If he lost, he'd only have $30 million or so left. His wife, Susan, was busy spending the better part of $15 million decorating their Manhattan apartment. Meriwether knew this. And as Goodfriend was the boss, he clearly wasn't bound by the same Meriwether code. Who knows? Maybe he didn't even know the Meriwether code. Maybe the whole point of his challenge was to judge Meriwether's response. Even Goodfriend had to marvel at the king in action. So he declined. In fact, he smiled his own brand of forced smile and said, "Hey, you're crazy." No, thought Meriwether and all the bond traders in the Solomon Brothers trading floor, just very, very good. So are you ready to go up against John Meriwether?
Good.
Yeah?
For $10 million?
No. Yeah, neither am I. That's why I've never tried to do trading. I've taken some risky bets, and they did well at first, and didn't do very well. But every time I've done something solid, long-term oriented, you know, it's bounced up and down, but they've all done well over the long term. Are you with me? So now, what is a realistic rate of return for me? As we saw, if we have a long-term perspective, after you've taken this course, you will have a strong knowledge, a strong foundation of the most popular types of investments, stocks, bonds, cash, mutual funds. You will also know what levels of return and what levels of risk you should reasonably expect to receive. And if you are patient, long-term investor, I believe it is realistic to expect 8, 9, 10%, you could do better. You probably will if the world does what I think it's going to do, and that is continue to see tens of millions of people every year coming out of poverty the first time, having money in their pocket and wanting to go out and buy clean food and shoes and eventually cell phones and Disney and Marlboro cigarettes and Jack Daniels and then a car, maybe, who knows? Of course, as we will reiterate from time to time, there are no guarantees. The world could end, in which case, all bets are off. But is 9 or 10% good enough? The answer is yes. If you start early, which is why we love for the young folks to get started early. And again, you don't write today, do I got to do it right now? No. By the time you're 25 or so, there's that magic number. By the time you're 25, you want to have a good job, trade your life for your paycheck and your paycheck for the rent and the orthodontia and the veteran bill and all that stuff. But first, you're going to pay yourself first. You're taking business 121? Everybody taking business 121 teach you how to... Wait. Has he done this yet? Has he told you to pay yourself?
Yeah, he's talking about it.
Okay, good. Good man. Hope he's using all my materials. If you are patient and consistent, the other guys do. He didn't even bother to redo it. He just erased my name and put... He didn't even bother to take the document and redo it. Okay, if you start early, if you are patient and consistent, if you don't get too cocky or greedy, you do not chase after next big thing, whether it's Tesla a few days ago or Bitcoin 2 years ago or CMGI or AOL, and most importantly, you do not panic, because there's going to be times when your value is going to go down, and that's when you'll prove yourself to be a long-term investor. The trick is to take advantage of the time value of money, compound annual rate of return. Okay, so you should be learning this in 121, maybe not, because you're sticking in the first chapter, and then we get people excited, and then we come back to it later on. But we're going to use the present value in this class later on when we learn how to value stocks and other investments. But compounding, or the future value of money, tells us the amount to which a sum you invest now will increase based on a specified rate of return and time period. And we can do it for a lump sum or a series of investments. Now, for the vast majority of us working, I hate the term annuity because that's also a life insurance product, but it's an annuity, a series of payments. For the vast majority of us working grunts, this is the only way we're going to invest, right? $50 a month, $100 a month if we can afford it, through our paycheck, 401ks, through our Roth IRA from our checking account. And so we're not going to do these calculations. We're just going to take a look at the answer keys. But the if you look in your packet, I forget what page it is. It's like the last page. Yeah, the last two pages. It is not like it is. The last two pages are the same problems for future value that we do in the 121 class. So let's just take a look at the answers. Let's not do the calculations because they will not be on the exam, one, and they will, and you don't need to do them. And you're doing them in 121 anyway. So I don't know what happened to the other, so I'm going to go down here. Okay, so here we have the future value worksheet commentary, but let's just take a look at the answer key. And forget number one, that's a $10,000. Again, not many people have, you know, I went 50. Oh, by the way, when you see it view only, when you see view only, remember file, make a copy or download as. Don't request it for me because I'll say no. this is my original. I don't want you goofing with it. You can file, download as, Word, excuse, Excel, or make a copy and then use Google Docs. So forget this guy, the first one. But the second one is really important because this is what, let's make it bigger. Second one, you heard of Bend Over, he used to play roller derby. Anyway, he started at age 30, for the Kansas City Bombers. And he started at age 30 and he started putting $5,000 a year away. Now it sounds like a lot of money, right? No, it's not. Because he's been making payments to Ford Motor Credit Corporation for the last 5 years to pay off his Ford Explorer. And so now it's paid off. And he says, okay, no more of that $400 a month. I'm going to send it to me. And he does this for 30 years. And if he gets 10%, that $150,000 that he will have put away, $5,000 a year for 30 years, will have turned into $800,000. Oh, wow, right? Pretty darn good. And if we extend it another 10 years, it's exponential. And who can tell me what an exponential growth looks like? Right, that's what happens. We're going to see it later on. Okay, now, Eileen Forward is his cousin. Because he's bend over, Eileen Forward. And she's only 20 years old. And she starts putting that same $400 a month into an investment, but she only does it for 10 years. Now, wait a minute. Is somebody 20 years old, is that realistic for somebody to put $400 a month away? If you're in college, not typically. But I can't tell you how many ex-military in this class, and especially online, I pissed it all away. I bought a new Camaro every couple of years. I went partying, and yeah. So, some people, yes, they can do it. But she does that and only does it for 10 years. So that's $5,000 a year for 10 years. That's 50 grand, which is what some people pay on a car that in 10 years will be worth $5,000. And she gets that same 10%. So for 10 years, the $50,000 becomes 80 grand. At age 30, she's got 80 grand. Now she could use that for a down payment on a house, go around the world two or three times, but instead she just lets it sit. She doesn't do anything. For 30 years, at the same 10%, it becomes 1.4 million. You see? Over time. Time is your friend when you're young. What? Well, you got to put away more. You got to put away more, and you have maybe want to take a more prudently aggressive. You don't want to be too aggressive because that 800,000 can become zero very quickly if you roll the dice and are you with me? You understand? Are you going to go up against John Merriweather? $10 million, one hand, no tears? I'm not. And then the last guy, their friend, is Neil Down. So you have bend over, I lean forward. Okay, there's a lot of these people in 121. Not too many here in this class, but just in time and Turner, you heard of Turner? Turner over, yeah, okay. So anyway, Neil is a Starbucks fan. Anybody in here a $5 fan? I'm sorry, $4? What? Yeah, they've, $5, that's why it's called $5. And you get the, Frappuccino with the 30 weight oil, right? So that's $150 a month, or about $1,800 a year. Now, if he starts at age 18, what if he does that till age 68 at that same 10%? $2 million. $90,000 over 50 years becomes $2 million. And then what people say is, well, where are you going to get 10%? That's why you're in this class. I'm going to show you things that have done better than 10% over 50 years. Sorry? If they're in Roth IRAs, no tax. Yeah. Now, I don't think it's going to last. I think the Congress is going to go. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. Okay. Now, another question is, ooh, what's $2 million going to be worth in 50 years? So, what? Yeah, I hope so. Who knows? But, I mean, not in California. But when the people ask me that, I say, okay, I answer that question with a question. I want you to go to your grandparents and your parents and say, Grandma, would you rather have $1.4 million now at age 60 or not have $1.4 million now? And I think you'll know the answer, right? Because she doesn't have $1.4 million. So when you go home today and your parents say, what'd you learn in school today? Are you going to say,
nothing.
You're going to show them this and they're going to go, why didn't they teach us this when we were in college or high school? Right? Okay, so now you can't say that in 30, 40 years when your kids come home or whatever and say, we learned about future value of money. Okay, got it with? Okay, good. You got the good news. All right, let's continue. All right, one last comment. Where would you put $100? The year one investment A does 85%.
Investment B does 10%.
Year two, investment A loses 50%. Investment A gains 9%. So where would you put A or B? Got your ABCDs? You don't have to use them. How many people pick A? I'm sorry, year one, you gain 85%. Year two, you lose 50%. Of the investment as it is at the end of year one. It goes up 85%, then down 50%. Year one for investment B goes up 10%, and then year two goes up 9%. You want to do A, right? You're wrong.
No, I'll be
A. After 1 year, investment A is 185, investment B is 110, but now when you lose 50%, investment A goes down to $92. You see, the numbers going down are not the same as the numbers going up. You think, oh, well, you're still up 30%. Wrong. So you want to avoid large losses because they are the ones that... And then what happens, people just say, I'll never... I remember I was sitting at a party. This was Thanksgiving, I forget, a few years ago when Apple did this. And then fell 50%. And, of course, what did she do? She told me, after she learned, I teach this stuff, I'm a stockbroker, I'll never invest again. I can't believe it happened to Apple. I kept saying, it's a long-term investment. It's a long-term investment. You have to think long-term. No, she bought it as it shot up to 700, sold it when it went down to 380 or something like that. It is now split-adjusted over $3,000. If she just held on, yeah. What?
At least she got it then before she made it. No,
unless she...
she got it. She's going to make even worse trades.
Oh, right. She's never going to... You watch.
She's never going to win.
She probably bought Tesla last Thursday. Okay, Andrew. This is it. And some of these people are not stupid. They have things like MA and PhD next to their name. And some of them work here. And I remember one guy telling me how he... jumped out. I'm going to wait till it's a better time. I said, you sold? He said, yeah. I said, I'm thinking, you Idiot! You pigeon! You've been skewered, plucked, and roasted, you dumb! How could you do that? I'm going to wait till, you know, wait till it goes up like that. Then I'll buy again.
Like
yeah.
Stupid. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Not stupid can you be? Of course, no, I didn't say that. I'm thinking it inside. I'm going, yes.
2008, a lot of people talk to me about stocks, how it's not a wolf, a good investment, you know? And 2018 wasn't, I mean, I saw Apple go down to 150 now, but a year later it became about $300.
Right, exactly. It's a long-term perspective. You have to have a long-term perspective. Because if the world ends and stocks fall flat on their face forever and then don't come back, that means there's no food at the Vons, no gas at the Chevron station, the clothes, no gasoline, yeah. And that's not going to happen, right? Because you're going to get up in the morning, put on your pants, and go to work. And you're going to give the injections, you're going to deliver the milk, you're going to teach the children. That's how it works. And now it's very complex. We're in the middle of it, so it's hard to get a handle around a $20 trillion economy. But it's the best time to be alive, folks. Andres.
Apple stocks actually value the most companies in Europe.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Apple itself is bigger than many countries, yes.
Yeah. No,
okay. Now, before we embark on the process of identifying and familiarizing yourselves with the longer-term, higher-yielding investments, let's learn how and where to park our money. Wait a minute. we normally would have standard deviation would be fresh in your mind. But the greater the standard, the variance and standard deviation of the average annual returns of an investment, the greater the standard deviation, the greater the risk, the lesser the risk, or there's no correlation, or standard what? I always hated statistics. So what is it? Greater the standard deviation? A, B, C, D?
A.
Okay, so again, make sure you got your A, B. Somebody left theirs here. And I think I need to get some more because I think most everybody has them. But all right, so let's continue. Okay, now, don't get this wrong on the exam, all right? It's bad for my self-esteem. Well, they're not listening to me. They're thinking about lunch, and they're thinking about the guy next to them who's cute, and, oh, I got to pay that bill. So just study every day, and don't get this one wrong on the exam. So now, to review, short-term investments. Short-term investments are boring. My apologies. So we got a little bit of a boring presentation to do. But as we know, if we have a short-term time horizon, we need this money for a down payment, we need this money to live off of, it's our financial aid or whatever, that's where it's got to be in short-term investments. So remember, we call it cash, but it's not cash. It's savings accounts and the like. Guaranteed or pretty darn close. Liquid, very low risk of losing principal, hence 1 to 2. Many years since the Great Recession, paying close to zero. Finally starting to rise towards the norm, a place to park your money and also used as an investment fund. So let's take a look at the two different ways of earning interest. The stated, or sometimes called nominal, rate is what we're used to. You're going to get 1%. So you put in $100, after a year, you have $101. But when you start moving away from the ones that we're very familiar with, like savings accounts and CDs, into the treasury bills and corporate paper, you have the discount basis. And you might be familiar with this if you have a savings bond that somebody gave you when you were a newborn and you don't even know where it is. What happens is you buy the security at a discount. Say you buy it $4,800, and then when it matures in 9 months, it is $500. So your interest would be $200. You see, they don't pay you, they'll tell you what the rate is, but they don't pay it on the principal. You buy it at a discount, and then it accrues, and that's the word we use. It comes from accounting. Accrues, not you know, going down to Ensenada on the boat or anything like that, but accrues, it gets larger, it gets magnified, it grows until finally when it matures, and then you hand it in. But it's all electronic now, so there's no paper involved. All right, so we're going to take a look at those different types. What are the risks? Wait a minute, Piano, you told me there's no such thing as a risk. No, there are risks no matter what investment you have. There are always risks. Are you going to lose your money? No. No. Everyone shake their head no. Wait till I ask you. Are you going to lose your money? No. But what can you lose? Purchasing power. What does that mean? If inflation is running at 2%, which is basically what it has been, you know, it's very uneven because some things go down, but 2%, and rent's going up faster than that, and your money's earning 1%, what's happening to your money? It's actually shrinking, isn't it? Well, no, you see your $100 become $101, but now it costs $102 to buy what $101 cost last year. So that's called purchasing power risk. And then opportunity cost. Huh? What is that? Have you taken economics yet? Maybe a few of you. Did you discuss opportunity cost in detail? Well, we're going to dance around it. We'll take a look at it in, well, we took a quick look at it when we saw the difference between stocks and bonds and short-term investments. By choosing short-term investments when your time horizon is long, you're giving up the opportunity of having a better rate of return. So every investment has risks. In the case of short-term investments, we're not going to lose any money, but we could lose purchasing power and we could lose opportunity. So now, repeat after me. There is no such thing as a risk-free investment. And so what you're going to do as the investment guru is you're going to make sure your friends and family understand that there are always alternatives. There's no such thing as the perfect investment. There are good alternatives for certain situations and there are bad alternatives for certain situations. And people don't like that uncertainty. You know, especially if you, any science people in here? Any math-oriented science people in here? Yeah? What are you after? When you're in science, you want to know the facts, right? You want to know certain. You run this experiment, this is what you're going to get. And if not, why? Because the laws of physics apply, right? Or chemistry or whatever. But in investing, we never have that certainty. We just don't. We just don't have that certainty. And some people really don't like that feeling, but you're going to get used to it. Hopefully. By the end of the semester, you're going to feel even more uncertain. And I guess I'd say to people, are you feeling like you don't really know what to do yet? Get used to it. Because you'll always be questioning yourself whether you're doing the right thing or not. And what you have to do is be kind to yourself and realize that just because this guy got 12% and I only got 10%, don't beat yourself up. You still did okay. All right, so deposit accounts, savings accounts. As they're often called in the more refined circles, passbook savings accounts. But no one uses that term. But anybody still get the passbooks? Some of the credit unions still give that to the kids. You know, the kids. Anybody still have this little pass? Looks like a passport. Looks like a passport. And you bring it in, and the little child brings in with their $5 that they've saved, and the clerk stamps it. Oh, looks so official. But not too many people still use these. If you're at a credit union, it's legally not a savings account. What do they call it? The savings account. But legally, it's called a share account because you're a member of the credit union and it is your share. Everyone calls them savings accounts. If you have a checking account that pays interest, that's legally called a negotiable order with withdrawal. Nobody calls it that. It's a checking account that pays interest. Are you with me? You see what you're up against? All right. And then we looked at the money market mutual fund very quickly. We'll look at those in detail next week. Well, banks and credit unions now have money market accounts. And what's the difference? Well, it's a fancy checking account, really. It usually comes with very sexy looking checks, but not anymore. It's all electronic. And you get a little bit better rate of return than the checking account with interest. As we said, they're often called demand accounts since the funds are available upon demand. They provide the highest level of liquidity, meaning get your money out, and they're guaranteed up to $250,000 by the federal government. Now, you say, well, I have more than $250,000, and I want it to be guaranteed. What do you do? you go to another bank. You put $250,000 in one bank and then $250,000 in another bank, and if you're really that frightened, put another $250,000 in the other bank, and then you'll be cool. Okay? Now, you go to the bank or the credit union, and you have $77,000 in there, and you say, I want my $77,000 today. They'll say, okay, what? Yeah, they'll say, okay, we'll create a check for you. It's a bank check, credit union check. It's based on our institution, and you can take it with you. So now I want the cash. And what would they do?
Probably FDIC.
Exactly. after you leave, they're going to say, well, you know, we don't have $77,000. Come back tomorrow, and we'll get it for you, because they have to go order it, because they're allowed to do that. They can wait one day, and then they call the FBI, because that is a suspicious activity. How much is the limit on a suspicious activity? There is none. Sure, it's your money. But the Patriot Act says that's a suspicious activity. You might be a drug dealer. You might be a terrorist. And we're going to call the FBI. So people say it's $5,000, $10,000. No, there's no dollar amount. It just has to be suspicious. If all of a sudden you want to take out $12,000 and you've never taken out that much money at a time, they're going to call the FBI. Now, is it going to amount to anything? I don't know. I don't work for the FBI. But one of my students, we talk about this in the 121 class, and he came up to me and said, you know, we've been trying to get my mother to put the money in the bank, because the Mexican culture, they don't trust the banks. And with good reason, in the early 80s and then the early 90s, 1990s, 1980s, the banks stole their people's money, literally. So a lot of people from Mexico still don't trust the banks. So she's been saving up her life savings in the house. Now, is that smart? Everyone should say no. Wait till I say, is that smart?
No.
No. What if there's a fire? What if it's stolen? One woman in China took her money and buried it in the ground, and the worms ate it. Yeah. Yum, 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 yum. So he said to me, what happens if we bring the money to a bank? I said, I don't know. So I called the FBI, and I finally got to somebody who is retired, but he still works part-time, and they gave me him because he does. Yeah.
I heard banks use your own money to invest.
Well, sure. They take your money, but they have to have a certain amount on reserve. They take your money and they lend it out to people using credit cards. So they give you 1% or half, and they lend it out at 18%. Right. See, when you grow up, you want to be a bank. Currency trading, not something different. We'll get to that. That's dangerous. Don't do it. Yeah, Forex, foreign exchanges. Don't do currency trading. But if you want it, come to my office and we'll talk about it. But we'll get to it at the end of the semester when I teach you to stay away from these things. So I finally talked to this guy and he said, look, we see this a lot, especially with the Mexican culture and the Filipino culture. People don't trust the banks. They put their money in the house and then finally somebody convinces them, put it in the bank. Don't be cute, he said. And I said, what does that mean? Don't be cute. Don't take in $5,000 and then $8,000. Just take the whole damn thing in, put it in the bank, and be done with it. Okay. All right. So that was from an ex-FBI agent who still works part-time. Yes?
So why do you think that Forex is like bad?
Well, bad. It's dangerous.
I know people like personally that do it.
And how much have they made or lost?
Well, he's paying his monthly Dodge Challenger with his Forex.
Okay. Okay, good. What can I say? Good luck. He's up against John Merriweather. You understand?
I heard banks hire people to trade currency.
Yeah, that's a whole different part of the bank, though.
That's how they stay open.
I'm not a federal regulator, but my understanding is that the bank cannot use this money to do that kind of stuff. They are regulated. Banks are very regulated. And they're not allowed, and they used to be allowed to do certain things, and that's what caused part of the problem back in 2008. But they're not supposed to be using that money, this money, to do that kind of stuff. They're supposed to use that money for mortgages, car loans. Credit unions love car loans. That's their lifeblood. Mortgages, car loans, credit cards, that kind of thing. They're not supposed to be gambling, which we don't use that word, speculating with your money. Okay, that's my understanding. You talk to the regulators to find out if it's actually they're not allowed. I'm pretty sure they're not allowed to do it anymore. They were allowed to do it. They did it before, but they didn't. They used other things called credit default swaps, which were just as dangerous. We don't want to remember. Okay, what do you got to know for chapter one? Okay, stocks, bonds, mutual funds, and all you got to know about derivatives is that they derive their value from something else, and they're dangerous. Options and futures being the most common choice. Currency trading are futures. They're called futures. They're part of futures. It's currency trading. But credit default swaps are kind of like that, but they're not. They're different. Okay, but the same idea. They're deriving their value from something else. Okay, now, you may, as a child, well, you may don't remember because you were a child, but your aunt or uncle or grandparents might have given your parents a savings bond in your name. If that is the case, ask your folks if there are any lying around the house or in a drawer somewhere. Now's the time to cash them in. Because if you cash them in, you never pay state and local taxes. The feds can't tax the states can't tax the feds. But you can use them for higher education and not pay any federal income tax. So now's the time to cash in those savings bonds. So find them if you've got them out there and pull them in. They are using the discount basis. You buy it for $50 and then 20, 30 years later, it's worth $100 or whatever. Are you with me? Mm-hmm. And these are, you know, again, as I said, very popular with gifts. They don't pay very well. I'm not a big fan of them, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't use them. You might think, oh, because they're based by the United States Treasury. Is the United States government going away anytime soon? Maybe. I don't know. We might become the United States Imperial Empire with Darth Vader the Emperor at the helm. Anyway, there are two other kinds, the Series HH, which are being phased out, and then the Series I bonds, which are very popular with people who believe that inflation is going to take hold. After the Great Recession, when the Federal Reserve Bank injected all this money called reserves into the banking system, people believed, oh, inflation is going to explode. So they started buying these I bonds, and these are guaranteed to outpace inflation, but not by much. They don't pay very well. They pay accrued interest at the bond's maturity of 30 years. And again, if you use them for higher education, going to college and the like, training for a job or whatever, you do not pay any federal income taxes. Also, they're a maximum purchase of $30,000 per year. So this is part of your assignment. You're going to take a look at these things at treasurydirect.gov. But let's get through this, and then we'll take a look at the assignments. Okay, treasury bills. Remember we talked about the risk-free rate of return? Sometimes you'll see it capitalized. Sometimes you won't see it capitalized. They are obligations of the United States Treasury, and they are sold at a discount. They use the discount basis. They vary in 1, 3, 6 months. I've seen them a little longer, up to 9 months or 1 year. They are generally regarded as the safest of all investments, and that's where we get the risk-free rate of return. When people say, okay, what's the risk-free rate of return currently? They look at the 3-month treasury bill, free from state and local taxes, and can be purchased directly from the Treasury at treasurydirect.gov, which is actually a pretty cool website. It's a little tricky. You got to play around trying to find out what you're looking for, but that's your assignment. You're going to go on this website and try to find the answers, answers to the questions I give you. Now, the answers are not as important as the process. Does that make any sense? Let's take a look at it, by the way. It's the second to the last page. On the back, I think, like page 8. The answers to the questions for treasurydirect.gov are there. I'm sure they're there. But it takes a little futzing around to find them. That's okay. That's good. And again, as I said, the answers are not as important as the process. So if you can't find one or two, all right, it's not the end of the world. But more importantly, as you are going through this website and familiarizing yourself with the website and the investments themselves, I want you to analyze your emotions, analyze your thought process. And it's a little zen, right? So we often don't think about what we're doing as we're doing it, but I want you to think about it. And if you absolutely hate this, that's okay. That's fine. That's it's kind of tedious, a little boring, but if you absolutely hate it, you think, oh, I'd rather be doing something completely different, then that's a good sign that maybe you shouldn't be your own investment advisor. Maybe the investment world is not a good career for you. But if you find that this is interesting, now this one, there's not as much going other places. We're going to do that more later on when we look at different individual stocks and mutual funds and the like. But just if you do enjoy it, that's a good sign that, yeah, maybe this is for you. And remember this is pretty boring. That's why we're doing it now, getting it out of the way. Okay, questions, thoughts? And also on the back of that page, you're going to find, the back of that page is the short-term investment assignment. No, page 8 and 9, 7 and 8. 7 and 8. You're also going to find the latest auction results for Treasury bills on treasurydirect.gov. Okay, so we'll go back to these again in just a few moments. Sorry if I'm confusing you. Now, CDs. Okay, so I haven't been writing this down yet. So what do we got here? We got the savings bonds. We got the Treasury bills. Sometimes it's uppercase B, sometimes it's lowercase B. And now we got CDs. Not compact disc, and you guys don't even know what those are. I do. But certificates of deposits. You know, the floppies are even before the CDs. You know what I mean? I used to teach programming and computers, and I kept all this junk in my office. I'd pull it out. And then when I didn't teach it anymore, so I gave it to Kathleen Caney. She just retired. And she made a little exposition, a little display right around the corner here. I went to a guy who gave me vacuum tubes. They were the first computers that used vacuum. Well, actually, before that, they weren't considered computers. They were tabulating machines. They actually used knitting needles to determine whether it was something on or off. On or off. Anyway, CDs, certificates of deposits. They're fancy savings accounts. You tell the bank, the credit union, you know what? I don't need this money for 7 days or a month or 6 months or 2 years. And they'll give you a better rate of return than a regular savings account. Cool? What's the catch? You're going to make, exactly, you can take it out. You're going to make more money than a savings account, but if you take it out prematurely, they're going to penalize you. So they're going to take some of your, or all of your, income. So the idea is, look, I know I don't need this money for 6 months. If I put it in a savings account, I'm going to get 0.5%. If I put it in a CD, I might get 1% these days. Maybe more. You're going to figure this out. So there's a penalty for early withdrawal. As long as you know I don't need this for 9 months or whatever, great. But if you do have to pull it out sooner, they're going to take some of the money back. It's insured to the same $250,000 per investor per bank. And there are some CDs that are brokered. Huh? The bank, the credit union, needs some cash. They have to build their reserves. And so they'll go out to the brokerage firms and say, look, will you sell our CDs? And they give them a commission, and the interest rate's higher. But don't worry, you're not going to lose your money, but if the bank's in trouble... Do you know what happens if a bank's in trouble? Probably not, because it hasn't happened since the Great Recession, when many banks were in trouble. The regulators put a lock on the door, and everybody gets a little letter in the mail saying, hello, we're the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. We have seized your bank. Don't worry, your money is safe. We will make sure you all get your money, but it might take a few months as they work everything out. Now, why would a bank get in trouble? Any reasons? What? Yeah, they made some bad loans. Maybe somebody stole the money. That's not going to happen. But they made some bad loans, and now those loans are not performing, and the reserves are going down and down and down, and now they can't make their daily transactions in and out of the bank. So they go to the regulators and say, oh, we're sorry. We goofed. And so now, now the regulators have to step in. And what invariably happens, folks, is that all the rest of the world knows about it, the banking world knows about it. And so a bigger bank will say, oh, don't, we'll take over their branches. Right? So Podunk Bank becomes Wells Fargo or Chase, and the bigger banks get bigger and bigger and bigger, too big to fail. And be careful, CDs usually roll over. What does that mean? So you had a six-month CD, you have 2 hours on the third Tuesday, and you have to get in there at 2 o'clock before 4 o'clock, or they're going to roll it over. No, you have 2 weeks. They're going to roll it over for another six-month period. But you can say, no, folks at the bank, when the 6 months are up, automatically deposit into my checking account. Okay, so or else it'll roll over. You don't tell them. They'll just roll it over for another 6 months or 2 years or whatever. Now, these are the weirdies that you and I... What?
I swear IOUs.
Well, they're IOUs. They're promissory notes. Corporate paper and banker's acceptance notes, which sounds silly, but they're basically the same thing. These two guys are not for the general public. They come in $100,000 denominations. How many folks do you know have $100,000 lying around the house?
Let's see.
Okay. So, yeah, let's see. So they come in 90-day, 180-day, 270-day. Why? Like the Treasury bills. Why so short? Well, by keeping the maturity less than 1 year, they don't have to go through the entire process of creating a bond issue through the Securities and Exchange Commission. And what is that? Well, we'll talk about initial public offerings and the Securities and Exchange Commission later on. But just know that your JCPenney's or your Home Depot or your Exxon, you can say, look, I need $90 million. And they go out to the investment community and say, will you let investors lend it to us? Now, most of us are not going to do this because we don't have $100,000 or $300,000 or $3 million, but mutual funds, pension funds, life insurance companies, they have this kind of money to invest. So they will buy these things, and they will buy commercial paper. Institutional, sometimes called investors, money market mutual funds that we'll take a look at. And the same thing is true for bankers' acceptance notes. Bankers' acceptance notes are used by companies that are not, that do not have the stature of ExxonMobil, don't have the stature of Walmart. But they need some cash in the short term. Typically, they're used for international trades. You're a small manufacturer, and you need some serious parts from Japan or Germany or wherever, or Taiwan or whatever. And so you go to your bank and say, look, I'm not big enough to join the big boys and girls on Wall Street in commercial paper world. Wells Fargo, Bank of America, Chase, will you lend us the money? And they'll do it, say, fine. Here are the banker's acceptance notes. Now, do you think the bankers make money off of these? Yeah, the bankers make money off of these. You sell these out in the secondary market. You sell these out in the investment world. You'll get the cash, and then you got to pay us back more at the end of the 90 days. And so that's how that works. But again, do we buy these things? No. All right. And then lastly, my favorite, doesn't mean it's the best, but I usually don't tell you what my favorite is, but it's just that money markets are so easy. They're just so easy. They're mutual funds. These are mutual funds that pool the capital of large number of investors and use it to invest in exclusively in short-term investments. And what do they typically buy? Commercial paper, bankers' acceptance notes, treasury bills. That's what they normally buy. Virtually all brokerage firms, mutual fund companies offer them. They are not guaranteed. Did we say that already? I don't think we did, but we will now. They are mutual funds. So they're not guaranteed by a bank or any other entity. So you may lose money. No, you're not going to lose money. They are still considered virtually risk-free. If there ever is a default, the other companies step in and bail out the investors with the blessing of the regulators. And the last time, it's called breaking the buck. The last time this happened, did we talk about this on Tuesday a little bit?
No.
We didn't? Okay. Here's what happened. In 2008, Lehman Brothers went under. The government let them go under. It was a very bad decision because it was like a domino. That one fell, and then a bunch of others fell. And that's when the organic matter hit the Mendeleev device and the Great Recession started. And one company that had money market funds that had a significant amount of commercial paper from Lehman Brothers all of a sudden lost money in their money market mutual fund. And how it happens? Well, these things are designed to always be a dollar. They look like a checking account because you put dollars in, you get dollars out. But all of a sudden, that dollar became 99 cents. It's called breaking the buck. And if you're really interested in this, just type breaking the buck into any search engine, and you will see dozens of, well, millions of articles about what happens when money market mutual funds lose money. And so the regulators step in. Of course, the company goes and says, oh, we goofed. They had two. One went to 99 cents. The other one went to 97 cents. And the whole world stood up and took notice. And that's when the Treasury, sorry, you know, these things are not guaranteed. Who came to the rescue? The Federal Reserve Bank. Because when you grew up, you want to be a bank. And if you could, you'd love to be the Federal Reserve Bank. Because they have an unlimited amount of money, believe it or not. And they said, relax. We will backstop. We will guarantee all money markets. There's like $3-4 trillion out there. We will guarantee all money market funds for the next 6 months. So from September to March of 2009, in the middle of the great, that's when the Antichrist had been elevated. That's what some people believe. And then after 6 months, they said, relax, we'll do it for another 6 months. And by September of 2009, things had calmed down to the point where people were no longer worried. So are you going to lose money in a money market mutual fund? Everyone's saying no. Wait till I ask you, are you going to lose money in a money market mutual fund? Is it guaranteed? No. You have to tell people it's not guaranteed, but you have to also tell them that, hey, it basically is. And they offer you check writing, although people don't use I still have one client who loves checks off her money market account. Okay, here we are. So, which short-term investment is for me? Commercial and paper and bankers' acceptance notes are usually only suitable for institutional investors. Savings bonds make cute gifts for newborns. Many investors purchase treasury bills directly from the Treasury, treasurydirect.gov, and certificates of deposits, I guess, are okay for those that are sure that they will not need the money until maturity. I have a friend, that's all she will invest. She's known me for 30 years. She knows I'm into, and I interviewed her on the website, if you want to go check it out, Jean. She will not put any, even though she grew up with her mother buying AT&T and other stocks. And then money market mutual funds and their counterparts at the banks and credit unions are the preferred choice, especially since every bank, credit union, brokerage firm, mutual fund company offers them. But I noticed that some people, especially those who haven't taken Business 123, still go to the bank and have $500,000 or whatever in a savings account. And that banker is licking her chops because what is she or he doing? Lending it out to people with credit cards at 19%. Do you think they understand future value of money? Yeah, they do. Okay, now emergency fund. This is something we talk about in Business 121, so I'm going to gloss over it. But some people, this is the financial experts, they're self-described, like Susie Orman. I don't know. She's kind of crazy. She's doing very well for herself. You should have 3, 6, 9 months of income in a savings account. I don't agree. That doesn't mean you shouldn't have $17.87 on hand. You should build up some kind of reserve. But that's, 50 grand for some people. Earning 0.5 these days. I don't know. There's one company. Some of the online students have already been online and doing the assignments. One company is now offering 1.7%. That's pretty good for a savings account these days. Still not that great. But there are some exceptions. If you're a salesperson, or self-employed, then you need a big cushion, right? And that's up to you. Okay, great. So now, got your ABCDs? Mm-hmm. We're almost done. ABCDs, who left hers here? Who left hers here? Okay. Oh, you don't have any? Well, I'm going to have to make more. So what's a mutual fund that pools the capital of a large number of investors, uses it to invest exclusively in short-term securities, commercial paper, money market mutual funds? Come on, folks, do it. Don't worry about being right. Don't worry. You don't have. You didn't get one. Yeah. Money market mutual funds and their counterparts at banks have rates that are close to CDs, but you don't have to worry about the early withdrawal penalty. What's a saving instrument in which funds must remain on deposit for a specified period? Normally a penalty for early withdrawal, commercial paper, money market mutual funds. Right, that's the CD, certificates of deposits. And if you know it, if you see interest rates going down and you don't need this money for 6 months or whatever, a year, you can lock it in. And often, especially credit unions, you'll put your money in there for a year or whatever and interest rates go up and you go, oh, damn. They'll give you what's called a bump. It's called a bump. After 6 months or something like that, you can bump it up to what the current rate is. That's cute. Maybe they give you one bump or whatever. And then what are short-term unsecured promissory notes issued by corporations with very high credit outstanding, normally sold in $100,000 denominations, commercial paper and their cousins are normally only purchased by institutional investors such as money market mutual funds. What is a guaranteed demand account at a bank or credit union that normally pays little interest but will often be offered with a toaster or waffle iron, which makes it all worthwhile? These commercial paper, money market mutual funds, a passbook savings account, or CDs? Yeah, that's savings account. No comment. Okay, good. So now, who controls short-term rates? This is better for your economics class. But what you'll see is that short-term rates, when you do your research, are set by the Federal Reserve Bank, not long-term rates. When we get the bonds, we'll see that the marketplace does that. The marketplace sets those. But the short-term, the Fed is responsible for setting short-term rates. They have two objectives, full employment and keeping inflation in check. And those two are kind of diametrically opposed. They were designed to be independent, not subject to political pressures. And of course, the madman in the White House does his best to tell the Fed what to do. So if you're interested in politics, remember poly means many, and ticks are blood-sucking insects. So if you're interested in that, please check it out. And we're done, chapter one. Cool?
Yay.
Okay, get to page 8 and 9, no, 7 and 8. Let's take a look at the assignment very quickly. So we looked at the one assignment. Let's look at the short term. This is the one that some people the weird thing about teaching online is that some people are really gung-ho, and some people even haven't even logged in. And then after 3 or 4 weeks, you drop them. They say, why did you drop me from the class? 2 weeks worth of dropping. So what you're going to do, and you can do this on the internet, or go into a bank or a credit union, or go down to the library, and see if you can find the best rates. It's not a race or anything. But now, the mutual funds, the money markets, you can go to this chapter 4, and there are six companies, but there are dozens of mutual fund companies that have money markets, so check whichever one you want. Now, the treasury bills, this is the one that gets people upset, but don't let it get you upset. Go to treasurydirect.gov and look for auction results or auctions, and that will tell you what they're currently paying. But it's like a sip from the fire hose. You get all this data, but just do your best and don't worry about it. Now, these next two, they're not going to be easy. And why is that? Because people who buy commercial paper and bankers' acceptance notes, they either have their own system, like a mutual fund company or a life insurance company, or they have their own private broker. So you walk into a brokerage firm and you say, I'd like to see some quotes on commercial paper and bankers' acceptance notes. Their eyes are going to get real big because all of a sudden they think you're worth millions. And then when they realize you're doing it for a community, get out of here. But they shouldn't, because you represent a future client. But these are going to be harder to find. But they're out there. You can find them. Cool? And then, as we saw the treasury, we already took a look at the treasurydirect.gov assignment. Play, have fun. If it's I shouldn't have told you that about if it's terribly hard. It's not hard. If it's painful, relax, because it's going to get more interesting. Mutual funds are more interesting, and stocks are incredibly interesting. So there's no football this weekend, right? No baseball, no basketball, no hockey, no UFC. Sports. They have a moratorium on sports. So you have plenty of time to study and have fun. Yes, Steve.
What website do you see the slides on? Is that on
the That's Wonder Professor. Remember, Wonder Professor. And if you want to go to Canvas, if you don't know how to do Canvas, come to my office. It's not that hard.
And what's how Canvas again?
Canvas, it's the same stuff. All Canvas does is it points to the website. But it walks you through very easily, walks you through the material. So check it out. I'm going to see if this thing's still working. And who wanted to add to class? I can't see anything. Next class is coming in, so let's get out of here. It's still working, yes! Hooray, I think. Yay!